Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Take the North is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more.
670 The Score's Mullinhaw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullinhaw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
What's up, guys? I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. We're heading towards the home stretch of the WNBA season, and there is so much to get into every episode. Twice a week, I'm joined by one of my amazing co-hosts as we dissect the biggest games, performances, and even some off-court drama. The playoffs are quickly approaching, and now is the best time to tune in. Who will come away as this year's champion? The competition is heating up, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
What's the reason, Duck? It's here.
With your hosts.
Love these guys.
Dan Wiederer.
The Bears don't have the readiness to go all in a championship or bust year.
And Mark Grody.
There's a certain amount of urgency to this season for the Bears. And I think the biggest urgency is make sure you have a quarterback in Caleb Williams.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Hello, what's going on? I hope everybody is doing well as we welcome you in to the Take the North podcast along with Dan Wiederer of The Athletic. I am Mark Grody of Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Dan, what is going on, my friend?
It's the bye week.
It's
baseball playoff time. It's all colliding in a really fun fashion here. Bears had a little practice on Tuesday at Halas Hall. They've wiped the Wednesday practice from their schedule. I'm sensing that maybe lifelong Cubs fan Ben Johnson might have tickets to game two on a wild card.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Do you think maybe he'd be up in the booth during the seventh inning at some point in time? Maybe,
I don't know if he'll watch it or what. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know I will be there on Wednesday at Wrigley
Field. Are you?
Okay. The Cubs potentially clinching a playoff series.
Oh my goodness. And for people who are like, what? The Cubs won as we record this. On a Tuesday, the Cubs have already beaten the San Diego Padres 3-1 in their best of three playoff series for the right to go to the National League Division Series. Seiya Suzuki and Carson Kelly with back-to-back homers. Matthew Boyd, a strong 4 1/3. And the bullpen, wow, the bullpen was the absolute star. They get 14 outs. Palencia, Pomerantz, Kittredge, Keller. Oh, Dan, it was good. That's awesome. You're going to the game on Wednesday. I'll be there too.
Don't forget the defensive mastery of Dansby Swanson early in that game, keeping that game within a run for the Cubs until they could catch up. And then the situational, this is stuff that football coaches talk about all the time. Situational execution. You get that insurance run there in the eighth with a little sacrifice bunch. You get the runners moved along with a wild pitch, and then Nico Horner doing Nico Horner things, understanding what the situation calls for, putting a ball in the air and getting that all-important insurance run.
Oh, my God, so nice. Yes, and you should, Dan, by the way, if you have time, stop out at Gallagher Way tomorrow before the Cubs game if you guys are getting there early, because the Raheemy Harris and Grody Show on The Score, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., will be broadcasting live, and that goes to anybody who is, because we know there's a lot of crossovers listening right here. If you're a Bears fan, you might be a Cubs fan. That's very possible.
No doubt.
Come on out. to Gallagher Way. Stop by, say hey, watch the show if you feel like it. But I talked to so many cool Cubs and Bears fans at Wrigley Field on Tuesday. A lot of Bears fans, a lot of people excited about the Cubs, but then there's a quick Bears. Just so we know, everybody knows we're on the level still. What's really important is the Bears.
I mean, look, like this is a fun time, and we've only had so many years where even one team is relevant, much less both. And so you have to feel good about what the Bears did in the 14 days after the Detroit loss, right? To get themselves back to 2-2, to be able to claw their way back into a position where they enter the bye week with confidence, with momentum, with a chance to reset, as we've talked about for several weeks, with a little bit of wind at their back and with a little bit more clarity than tension, right? And so It gives Johnson and his staff a chance to really attack these next 6-7 days to put together a plan and then go into Washington week the following week with a sense that you can really start to write your own relevance for this season. And so it's a big deal what they've done with these last two wins, winning these games in very different fashions, obviously with a blowout against the Cowboys and then coming right down to the final play on Sunday in Las Vegas. Getting those things done, Grody, it's very important in the belief building process. But then you and I also sat here on this very podcast a year ago when the Bears took a 3-game winning streak into their bye week with a game against Washington coming out of the bye. And you're like, oh, everything feels great. So just make sure to temper your enthusiasm while, I guess, kind of filtering out what's real and what's not as you go through the process. And that's what we're here, I think, to help you to do.
Yeah, absolutely. As Dan said, the Bears will be at Washington Monday, October 13th, home against New Orleans. And then you got those at Baltimore, at Cincinnati. So just to give you the next 4 games out of the gate. And yeah, as we do kind of look at what's real and what's not, or what's real good or what's real bad about the Bears. Yeah, they are 2-2. I would say just in the general, the first 2 losses were real bad. You blew a nice lead in the first game. You let a rookie quarterback beat you ultimately, and losing to a divisional opponent in the first game, 27-24. I don't have to say anything more than 52-21 in that Bears second loss of the season. The Dallas game was delightful, a 31-14 win where Caleb Williams had arguably his best game as a Bear with the 298 yards and 4 touchdowns. And then that brings me to the Bears win over Vegas, 25-24. And I haven't processed this game any differently than I did when the game was first played. Yeah, I'm into all the talk about it being a gritty win, and you got to win games like this, and it's tough to win on the road, and the Bears needed that to get to 2-2, do it however you got to do it. But there was a lot of bad things that went on in that game, and some of it was, as Dan just alluded to, it was real, as in the Bears allowing 240 rushing yards in the game. The Bears offense, again, struggling in the first half and not taking advantage of what the defense was doing, and it was just giving you the ball over and over in good field position. To me, those are real problems, inconsistent offense and certainly bad defense when it comes to stopping the run.
Grody, when this podcast started, David Hall and I used to do a little segment called Flip the Score. And it was essentially the day after a game, we would take the result and we would change the result from either a win to a loss or a loss to a win. And then we would have that discussion because the discussion is very different based on the result, right? And this game was perfect for it because the Bears were 1-point winners and they're a fingernail away from being 2-point losers, right? If Josh Blackwell doesn't get around the edge of that field goal block fast enough to get his right hand on the football, we're here talking much more seriously and much more intently about all the offensive problems that were in that game. You mentioned several of them: losing football when your defense continually gets you the football in premium field position and you don't do anything with it. There was an 8-play minus 1-yard scoring drive for the Bears on Sunday, right? Like, you can't make that up. 8 plays, minus 1 yards. You settle for a field goal after Kevin Byer gives you the ball at the 24. And that was just representative of an entire day. You had 7 more offensive penalties, 4 of them of the pre-snap variety. You had your starting quarterback have his lowest quarterback rating of the season. You had trouble containing Max Crosby. More on this in a bit. You had to change up your offensive line in mid-game because you weren't satisfied with the results you were getting. The running game can't get going. You even dipped into the trick play bag that Ben Johnson brings to every game, and you had 2 trick plays that could have been game changers, and they screw up the recreation of the stumble bomb, and it leads to an incompletion. And then they run actually what was a pretty nifty fake flea flicker the week after running a real flea flicker for the touchdown. And DeAndre Swift goes to give a stiff arm, gets his right pinky caught in Jermaine Pratt's face mask. And all of a sudden, a 7-yard gain turns into, you know, an 18-yard net loss after the penalty. And you're just sitting there looking at like, wow, this is a rough day for the Bears offense. And so those are the things, Grody, that I think that Ben Johnson will put the microscope on. It just comes with a little bit better feeling as you allow your players to clean up those mistakes without feeling the weight of a loss and a 1-3 start.
What's real bad? What's real good? I'll give you a real good so far through the four games, and I think this is real. Debbie Romadunze, 20 catches so far this year, Dan, 296 yards, 5 TDs, and not to underestimate this last stat, the fact that he's averaging about 15 yards per catch, 14.8 to be exact. Is that something that's real, Dan? Is that going to rocketing up for Romadunze?
It's as real gets right now. He's been in the end zone in each of the first four games for the Bears.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You can see the chemistry with Caleb Williams really, really clicking at this point. And it's super encouraging to see because those two guys are going to be playing together, presumably for a very long time. You get the touchdown the other day at the start of the third quarter after an offensive first half that had everybody a little bit on edge. There was some agitation from the head coach. Nobody's feeling really good about the results. And then Caleb, in the face of pressure with a six-man rush coming, knows what he's seeing, knows where the football needs to go, and delivering an absolute rocket strike anticipation throw down the seam to Romadunze for the touchdown that put the Bears ahead. And it's a moment, right? It's a moment within a game. When things are going poorly, you know, they talked about it earlier in the year that, like, really in that game against Minnesota, they were waiting for someone to make a play, right? They needed to close the game, and it was like, oh, who's going to make the play? And no one made it. That was a play that was made. And it's one of those jolts that a team needs in that moment to get themselves going again. Caleb to Rome, a big deal in Rome. The first four games of the year, obviously very, very encouraging with where he's been and with where he's coming from with the offseason of development that he devoted himself to.
FanDuel's getting you ready for the NFL season with an offer you won't want to miss. New customers can bet just $5 and get $300 in bonus bets if you win. That's right. Pick a bet $5, and if it wins, you'll unlock $300 in bonus bets to use all across the app. You can build parlays, bet player props, ride the live lines, whatever your style, FanDuel has you covered. The NFL season is almost here. The only question is, are you ready to play? Visit FanDuel.com/North to download the FanDuel app today and get started.
Must be 21 plus and present in Virginia. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Plenty of ups and downs for Caleb Williams, and we'll talk about him, you know, a lot, obviously, going forward. But I think something that is, man, in terms of, like, is it real or not? I guess this is the biggest one. Is it real that there should be confidence when the ball is in Caleb Williams' hand in crunch time. Did we see enough last year leading into this year? Obviously, he engineered an 11-play, 69-yard drive to win the game with DeAndre Swift scoring the touchdown for 2 yards and put the Bears up. They blocked the kick. That's a victory. But it feels like it's pretty safe to say that that is trending towards that's real. That's Caleb Williams.
No, it is real. And I'm going to run the numbers on this next week because we ran the Justin Fields numbers over his 3 seasons as a starter in situations where he had the ball in his hands in the last 8 minutes with a chance to either lead a game tying or go ahead drive. And how many times he failed? I think there were only 3 successful drives in Justin's entire run here. Caleb, between last year and this year, is starting to put together a track record that then marries up with the track record he had in college, which marries up with the track record he had in high school. And so this is a guy who's done this at every phase of his football life. And that belief that he brings is something he speaks, right? And teammates around him see it. They feel it in the huddle. They feel the command, the composure, the confidence in that moment. And it just puts you in a situation where no matter how a game has gone, again, as we talked about the other night, it may be 2 hours and 45 minutes of ugliness. And then you have the ball with a chance to go do something with it. And everyone goes, okay, we're good. We just got to lock in for this drive, complete this drive, and finish the job. And Caleb gives that to people. You and I talked Monday, Grody, on 670 The Score about that whole radioactive learn to win discussion that was taking place in our city a couple years ago when people couldn't decide whether Justin Fields was a good quarterback or whether he was just, you know, struggling because he wasn't surrounded with enough around him. The nexus of that entire argument is, do you have a QB1 on your roster and in your huddle that can go seize games when there are games to be seized? Caleb has that ability. It's one of his superpowers, his arm talent, one of his superpowers. This game on the line clutch gene that he has is the secret sauce in the NFL. You know how many of these games come down to the final couple minutes in a close game. When you have a quarterback that can not only instill belief in the huddle, but then back it up with results, it just becomes a wave that just keeps building, you know? And so I think that was a huge, huge moment again on Sunday on the road for them to get that done. And Caleb talked about it again on Tuesday at Hallis Hall in the bye week that he feels his heart rate slow down in those moments. And damn, that's a cool thing to have happen, because I know for me in my athletic career, those moments made my heart race and my mind go crazy, and I could never calm it. So to have a guy in your quarterback position do that is huge.
Dan, every locker room and clubhouse, especially in baseball, which I covered intimately for a while too, they all have mental skills coaches these days for that very thing to take. Everybody's out here breathing these days, Dan, taking deep breaths. You see it all the time. And so when you have somebody like that, if that is true, and I assume it is, that Caleb Williams's heart rate slows down, it's relatively rare, man. It is very rare for any athlete to have that ability to truly slow. Everybody says everything moves fast and then it slows down, but to have it really slow down and to have presence of mind is rare.
Just the word you said there, presence, right? Like, it's presence of mind. It's just general presence. It's being locked in on that very, very specific moment within that very, very specific drive within that very specific situation to go get it. I'm going to give Caleb credit Sunday also for another thing that we talked about a lot during the offseason, and we were interested to see how the maturation process would go. But this coaching staff talked to him very directly about body language, and in the heat of games that are a little bit, you know, chaotic and crazy, like that one in Vegas was on Sunday, can you kind of emanate a sense of calm for everybody around? And we didn't get any shots on the bench of Caleb kind of feeling agitated or feeling nervy or looking exhausted or you know, and he talked about it after the game in the post game that it's been a conscious effort to make sure that he does those things. And so when we're using this season as sort of inroads to assessing the maturation of Caleb Williams, we're going to check those things every once in a while. What does it look like now? Has it been consistent? That's a big deal, I think, for a young quarterback to have heard that coaching point, to have addressed it very intentionally, and then to display it in a game that ends up being a game that's very, very important to the Bears' psyche going forward.
Yeah, body language on the sideline, body language on the field when something doesn't go right, like the 29-yard completion to Cole Kmet, and then later on that drive, Cole Kmet drops a ball that was placed perfectly. Even the drop by DeAndre Swift may have had a little bit too much heat on it. I still think Swift should have caught that ball. I'm talking about the very first drive of the game, the third and three, where he zips it into him. And you're not seeing Caleb, you know, throw his arms up or slow. Got to get back in that huddle. Even if it's not him making the mistake, got to get back in that huddle, which he's gotten better at, too, getting up to the line, making sure you have time on the play clock, clock to
the play clock. We got you. The play clock is running down. Play clock.
It's okay. It's a podcast. We got to play.
Let's go with it. Let's just go with it.
That's my Bob and Meyer of the day. Errors are Bob and Meyers.
Sometimes you just got to extend the play when you have a mistake, and you get yourself out of it.
Keep it going. I will say this, Dan. The other real bad thing is the running game for the Bears. We talked about stopping the run game, and we'll get to the offensive line here in a second, just in general. But DeAndre Swift, so far, your number one running back, 56 carries, 187 yards, 3.3 yards per carry. Ben Johnson, before the Vegas game, said that he thinks they're close to getting this running game right. It doesn't look close to me right now.
It's a combination of a lot of things. It's things that are happening up front. It's a combination of what they're actually trying to become as a running game with all these different sort of looks and concepts and variations married together. I think that's why this bye week reset is important, because it'll allow them to look at that. And DeAndre hasn't put up the numbers that you'd expect on Sunday in Las Vegas. And I was happy to hear Ben echo this thought on Monday during his post day after win review of the game, that Swift wasn't the major problem of the running game difficulties on Sunday. And you go back through some of the video, and there was a stat floating around Twitter maybe 2 weeks ago about the yards after contact from DeAndre Swift. And my counterpoint was kind of like, there's a big difference between yards after contact when you've gained 4 yards and you got a full head of steam, and yards after contact when you take the handoff and there's a guy holding onto your ankle, which happened several times on Sunday. The last snap that Braxton Jones played, I don't know where the communication breakdown was, but the right defensive end, Malcolm Kuntz, just came in untouched into the backfield where DeAndre Swift took the football, and it's 3rd and 19. You're really just trying to get a little bit of yardage back, and instead it's a 2-yard loss because nobody blocks the right defensive end. And if you're DeAndre Swift, you're sitting there looking at like, well, wait a second, like I didn't have a chance on that play, you know?
Yeah.
And so there were a number of those things that happened. DeAndre's got to find his kind of rhythm in this specific running game and with the tracks that they're setting him on. But I think Ben is very, very aggravated at the all-encompassing malfunctioning of the running game right now, and is really going to use this bye week to try to get that figured out as best they can.
Yeah, and so let's head into the offensive line based on that. And crazy things happened. That was really kind of monumental what we saw in the Vegas game, with Darnell Wright being out, and the assumption is that he will get healthy and he will return to right tackle. But just for now, for our purposes, you then had Theo Benedet or Ozzie Trapillo playing the majority of the game at right tackle, and Theo Benedet, who started at right tackle, moved over to left tackle. We've had a few days to kind of digest what happened. Dan, what are you feeling right now about the Bears offensive line?
It's not only digesting what happened, it's trying to figure out what this looks like when they get back on the field for a game in 2 weeks. And so it's really, really difficult to know what you're going to do. Theo Benedet, my understanding, has played almost exclusively on the right side at the University of British Columbia, right? He's just made his first NFL start the other day. And so you would be asking a guy that, you know, obviously he's got some swing tackle ability, but to take on a role that's not necessarily his wheelhouse. Ozzie Trapillo, we know they tried it at the left side and it didn't work, and they moved him to the right. Does he stay in starting for at least a week when they come back to give Darnell Wright more time to kind of get better with the elbow injury he suffered against the Cowboys? There's a lot of things flying around here, and you're talking about starting week one with Braxton Jones and Darnell Wright. And now as we sit here today on September 30th, you're like, okay, do they go to Washington with Theo Benedet on the left and Ozzie Trapillo on the right? I think Ben, even on Monday, was like, it's too early for me to make any proclamations. I want to look at the last 4 games, see what I see, be honest with myself on what's there, and then try to figure this out. But Grody, this is a story as old as the Bears. It's offensive line reshuffling in the middle of the season and trying to figure out what makes the most sense for your team overall.
Yeah, no, it is wild. Like, we still don't know, like, is that it for Braxton Jones? Like, they've just decided, because Ben Johnson has been completely honest in his tone about Braxton Jones. He has yet to, including when he announced him as a starter, to really glow about this guy or really say anything overly over the top, which is fine. I'm not criticizing him. I prefer the honesty.
It's just telling, right?
It's very telling that this coaching staff came in with a plan, and their plan was not, they were not desirous of having Braxton Jones be their starting left tackle.
Well, and listen, like, Dan Rashar, the offensive line coach, is one of the truth-telling coaches in that building. And when you
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Talk to him every second week when we get a chance to visit with those guys at Hallis Hall. He was very clear that in the first couple games of the season that you watched Braxton Jones play, and the first half video is very different than the second half video. They see some fatigue creeping in. They see some sloppiness creeping in, and you can't figure out how to get first half Braxton Jones to the second half, you know? And so that's part of the issue that they've been fighting in the month of September. Now they've got to try to reset a vision overall. Ben was very clear, as you said, when they opened the season and he named Braxton Jones as starting left tackle, it was basically with huge, it wasn't even like fine print. It was like bold lettered 36 point that said, I reserve the right to change my mind, you know?
And yeah,
like, So here we are at that stage where he may have the opportunity to do that. And it'll be fascinating to see when they get back to practice next week, how they line up.
Yeah, and I think, look, I feel safe in saying that Braxton Jones is probably the better product still for right now, but I think they look at the future as not being Braxton Jones, and the future might be Theo Benedett. The future certainly has to be at some point in time Ozzie Trapillo if you do draft the guy in the second round. So it was nice to see Ozzie out there, just because I thought it was going to be a real struggle to get that guy on the field, and it'll be fascinating to see what the Bears do when they play against Washington.
Ben was asked a little bit about the offensive line on Monday in his, you know, day after win press conference, and we've got a little bit of sound in that'll kind of tie a bow on everything we've been talking about. But here's Ben Johnson from Monday as he kind of walked in to his bye week trying to figure out this offensive line.
I think we need to look at all four games so far as a whole, and we'll get a good feel here over the next few days where we're at schematically. What are we doing well? What aren't we doing well? And I think we'll really have a good grasp of what we need to do going forward. So it's too early for me to tell you that, Jason, to be honest with you. I feel like we got to go through this process and just figure out what's best for us and our team going forward here. I've got a lot of faith in the guys in that room. We got some talented individuals, and I really believe in the coaching staff in that room as well, that we're only scratching the surface of what we're capable of.
So there you have it, Grody, a little bit of a thumbnail from the head coach on where he sees the offensive line right now and how urgent it's going to be for them coming into the month of October to get that figured out.
He kept it nice and ambiguous and a big we'll see. So that will definitely create some drama leading up to the Washington game. Another interesting thing to watch, like you and I have a chance to literally watch and see the relationship between Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson evolve, whether it is watching Ben Johnson yell at Caleb Williams in practice and training camp and the practice that we get to see and, you know, sit in the starters and talking about the real talk conversations that they have had from the beginning. And like, we've heard this before, when Matt Nagy came in, the most important relationship in the world is my relationship with Mitch Trubisky. And we'd hear about that and we would ask about that. Then the same thing, obviously, with Matt Eberflus and Justin Fields and whomever else was coaching him, Luke Getsy. It's really important to have that dialogue and all that kind of stuff. So we've heard this stuff before, but this, Dan, I don't know how you feel, but there is something about it that feels a little bit more organic, as in it seems like there's a decent amount of tough love that goes into this relationship as opposed to his predecessors, where it was all just, it felt like pretty easygoing love, I suppose.
And they're trying to build a relationship that's deep. And that's, I think, going to be really interesting. We talked about it from the day we reported to training camp that kind of watching the synergy of Ben and Caleb was going to be really important to where this team could go. We're going to play a soundbite here in a moment that's from Friday. It's from 2 days before the Raiders game, where Ben Johnson discussed his kind of evolving relationship with Caleb Williams. But Brody, I think to set it up, you realize that so much of coaching is button pushing, right? It's knowing when to get on a guy's ass. It's knowing when to you know, give him an arm around the shoulder and say, you got this, you're good. And knowing when, like they did on Sunday with the game on the line, say, hey, you were made for this, go do it, you know. And then Caleb responds with a game-winning drive. And so this relationship between Ben and Caleb that includes conflict, you know, just inevitably and naturally, includes some of that getting to know you process of figuring out how we want to run our offense. It just includes a lot of dynamics that the two of these guys are still getting used to. And when Ben was asked on Friday just kind of about his overview of navigating that and surfing that, this was an extended answer that I think our audience will enjoy and that you and I can talk about on the back end.
I think that's coaching in general. We're not called to be here to be friends or be cheerleaders. We're here to push, to challenge, to support. You know, there's a number of things that the best coaches in my lives have really imprinted on me. And I picked up, whether I was a player or as a fellow coach, just taking it from other guys. And so I really think that's important. And it's not what the player wants to hear all the time. Sometimes it's what he needs to hear for us as a team to succeed, but also for him as an individual to get a little bit better. And you can't shy away from that. I think at this level, the best coaches I've been around, and I think it's an art, they're the demanding ones, that there's a vision for how a play needs to go, or there's a vision for how a fundamental needs to be executed, and you don't waver from that belief, and you make sure we're getting it right. And so you know, I try the best I can to emulate some of those good ones I've been around in my past, and I think that's probably where I've seen some downfalls of certain coaches, is they have been afraid of conflict and telling a player how he sees it. I learned over the last few years that, you know, when there's silence, there's usually negativity fills that void and breeds some resentment either way in a relationship. And so if you feel a certain type of way, it doesn't matter if you're the player or you're the coach, you need to bring that out and make sure we're all on the same page. We all have the same goal at the end of the day. And, you know, I've seen some relationships go sideways because just the communication aspect wasn't right. And Caleb and I have a great relationship right now. I can't ask for anything better. I think he's wired the right way. I think he's getting better every single day he comes into the building. He's putting in the prep time that's necessary for us as an offense to put points up on the board. And I think we're going to continue to see him head the right direction.
I love that, Dan. That was great. I love the fact, some of the things that he said. I mean, I do think Caleb Williams, believe whatever you want to believe from what happened last year, I think it's pretty clear he needed some tough coaching. And he said, I understood the spirit in which Ben Johnson said it, that he's wired the right way. Uh-huh. Actually, I think Caleb needed to be rewired into some. He's wired the right way in terms of being a ballsy quarterback who goes out there and gets it and understands all that stuff. But I do think that Ben Johnson had to lay down the law and say, for once in your life, and this is not Caleb Williams' fault, look, not everybody's going to kiss your ass every 10 mm-hmm. seconds that you're out here, and we're going to rewire you a little bit, but we want you to continue to be the right guy. And I always said it, Dan, like last year I questioned a little bit, like does, because we always hit Caleb over the head with that question of, do you want hard coaching? Oh yeah, I want tough coaching. Oh, did be careful what you wish for. Did you really want hard coaching? And I think maybe it was difficult for him at first, and now he's starting to get it.
And intent is at the center of all this, right? Like as a player in that relationship, you have to understand the coach's intent. And if there's an intent is to make you one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL with a drive to go win championships, you can respond to that, you know, and it has to be communicated in a way where you feel that intent very clearly. I've had some discussions with Kevin Byard about Tyreek Stevenson's growth. We'll get into more of that next week when we get into Tyreek Stevenson week leading into awesome. The Commanders game.
Yeah.
But one of the things that he said is Tyreek needs to know first that you genuinely care about him. And if you do, he can take every bit of criticism you throw at him. If he senses that you don't, he gets a little bit defensive. And so it's relationship building 101, right? And so there's this whole process going on between Ben and Caleb That's fascinating. You hear so many things within that soundbite we just played from Ben talking about, we're not here to be your friend or your cheerleader. We're here to push, to challenge, to support, right? You kind of pump your fist. If you're sitting in the front row of a meeting, you're like, damn right, right? Like, let's go. Let's go push, challenge, and support each other in a way that brings out results. I also like that he described the process of being demanding on the NFL level as an art, because I think he's right about that. And I think that's why you see some head coaches fail and some succeed, because that art is difficult to perform sometimes. And Ben seems to have a knack for it. It's one of the things that the Bears highlighted when they hired him, that emotional intelligence of knowing kind of when to push and when to pull back, and kind of how to navigate that. Look, like it's genuinely encouraging that they went through the month of September that they did, with four very different football games that ended with four results that happened in very different fashion. And they emerge at the bye week feeling very good about their relationship together, because I think this is a point in the season that they can get some extra work done with the extra time, and having a strong relationship to sort of advance that is going to be paramount to where the Bears go the rest of the year.
100%. And I would say for that, on the right track is the relationship with Caleb and Ben, and the play calling and what Caleb is doing. We need to see much, much more between both of them. But right now, everything seems to be in a pretty good place. A couple other notes before we get out of here. It would appear that things are trending in the right direction for TJ Edwards and Kyler Gordon to potentially return at Washington in that Monday nighter when the Bears next get together. I don't have a feeling yet, Dan, about Darnell Wright or Grady Jarrett. I saw that Jonah Jackson popped up with some sort of injury as well. So that's stuff that we'll get a better beat on. But, man, it'll be nice to see, hopefully, to see especially, you know, both those guys, Edwards and Kyler Gordon. I don't know which one is more important, but they're both huge.
Hey, Spidey, you're back. All right, good to see you, Spidey. Kyler Gordon should be trending in the right direction. I think Colston Loveland is on that list of guys that are making their way back quickly, which would be nice. You know how much the defense could use its playmakers. Being without Kyler and TJ and Jalen for the first month of the season, I think they've had to kind of rework things on the fly. Getting those guys back will give Dennis Allen a little bit more to work with.
Yep. Get into that turnover party. Bears forced another four of those. Your guy Kevin Byard had an all-pro game, like laying wood, showing speed. Missed a tackle, but everybody missed tackles on Ashton Jeanty. Dan, anything else before we get out of here? I mean, the bell's about to ring for everybody with the bye week. The Bears have had their final practice before the bye. So
yeah, I got two last things for you. I want to give us a homework assignment. We'll come back with this sometime in the next week. Because it's the bye, you know, annually we give out the Jeff Dickerson Good Guy Award to the person inside household that is most helpful and gracious, I guess, in helping the media do their job. We're going to put together Take the North. It can be a coach also. So that's why I said person. So because there might be a surprise addition to that. Before we play another game, I would like Take the North to deliver its Jeff Dickerson Good Guy Award watch list for the early October.
I love that.
Next couple of weeks. And we'll talk through some of that just to have fun and highlight some of the guys that have been really, really good inside that locker room for the last 4 or 5 months. I will also tell you this, little bit of a surprise on Dan Weider's return flight from Las Vegas. It was a one stopper through Sky Harbor International in Phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
I get back there, a really early wake up call. I get on a plane. We fly to Phoenix. I have a nice little breakfast at Le Grand Orange in the terminal there. I get on my plane. I get back to 22A. And who do I see come stampeding down the row but newly married Take the North producer Adam Studzinski on his way back from Maui? Or no, the Big Island. I'm sorry. In Hawaii. There he is. Studs.
Hey, what's up? Yeah, that was I'm sorry I didn't see you when I first got on the plane.
I'm a little frazzled getting that carry-on baggage stowed up above.
Hey, well, you know what? Yeah, gotta be the polite husband and lift the wife's bag up for her and make sure she gets seated in the whole night, because we weren't on the same row on that flight, which was whatever, I guess. yeah, that was so. And then I like immediately passed out when I said it, because I don't know if you guys know, if you've ever been to Hawaii. When you fly back, you leave at like 10 at night. So we left at 10 at night Hawaii time. We got into Arizona at, 7 o'clock Arizona time. And then, you know, it was a 3-hour layover before that flight to Chicago. And so, I mean, I slept the whole flight from Hawaii to Arizona, and then I slept most of the layover. And then I'm just like, I just got to get on this plane so I can fall asleep again. And then, so I basically, I sat down, put my phone in flight mode, and then passed out. And then I wake up turn my phone back onto, you know, regular mode, and I immediately see a text from Dan Wiederer. It's like, "Hi, Adam, 222A," and I'm like coming out of my like fog. I'm
oh,
like,
"What is man?"
I'm like, "What is he talking about?" And I'm like, "Is he on the plane?" Like, and I look because it was like three rows back. Like it was really yeah. close. He was actually in the row right behind my wife. So
I could have kicked his wife's chair repeatedly if I wanted.
Oh, that's yeah. hilarious! I didn't realize yeah. some of the details of that story. I figured he yeah. just saw each other. It must have been like symbolic. Well, it's back to work. I got weeds.
You know, like. I'm on my laptop in 22A typing some things up, and I just heard the voice of Adam coming down the road, and I'm like, Studs is on the damn plane. And you can't, like, from four rows behind yell, "Hey, Adam! Adam!" So I'm just like, I'll just hit him up with a text, and we'll figure this all out when we land in Chicago.
Well, that was that's, funny. That's I mean, what are the coming from two different parts of the world?
Yeah, right.
And you end up in the same, Hawaii, on the Vegas, same flight. Yeah.
That is amazing. Was it good, though, Studs? Are you all, you're married up now. You're all honeymooned up. You're back. Are you good? You're going to be good for a while. You're good. No major events coming up anytime soon.
I hope not. Okay. So
we know what comes next.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. I think there we go. It was a really good trip. It was really, really relaxing. Sick. I do want to say just one quick story from the trip. So as Dan mentioned, we're on the Big Island and there's this, we're on the west side of the island, is staying in this town called Kona. And about like 15 miles north, there's this state park that one of our Uber drivers told us about. And fun, like oddly fun fact here, the best recommendations we got about where to go were from Uber drivers. They were all super nice and like, anyway, so I was like, "Oh, that state park sounds kind of cool." And he's like, "Oh yeah, and it's good snorkeling there too." And I was like, "Well, we're going snorkeling tomorrow, so perfect." So we go up there, and I punch this thing in on the GPS, and it says 30 minutes. I'm like, "It's 15 minutes away, and it's one big road and then another road." And I'm like, "It can't possibly take 30 minutes." And so we get up 15 miles up to our road. We got to turn on and go to this state park, which is a beach, and about 100 yards into the road that we turned on, I immediately figured out why it takes 30 minutes to get here, because
it's not really a road, is it?
There's no more pavement, and so it's all, this road has not been taken care of clearly for years, and it's just botched. The whole road was a pothole, really. It was just one giant pothole. And so I had to maneuver. We're staying with my my friend who was my best man, his mom lives in Hawaii now. So we're staying at her place. We're using their car. Nice. And their car is like a 2021 Chevy minivan. And I'm like, I don't know if I can get this thing down this road without busting up the bumpers. And I managed to get it down, which was actually like, my wife was very impressed. Cause I mean, you have to just maneuver to like the best, quote unquote, best parts of the road try not to be bottoming out constantly. So it was a trip, man. And so it was, I mean, I grew up, you guys know, I grew up in the middle of nowhere, basically. Yeah. And this is the worst road I've ever driven on.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So,
Adam grew up south of Springfield. So just to
give north, you an idea. North of Springfield.
Oh, north of Springfield? Oh, my bad. My bad. Just when I thought I knew Central Illinois
that's
better.
That's fine. Those Southsiders down there, you know, we don't met. No. So, yeah, it was a great trip, though. And that was probably that and the volcano were our two adventures, I would say.
Wow. Impressive stuff.
You didn't get all lavaed up. You didn't get lavaed or anything like that by the volcano.
We actually missed the volcano erupting by 2 days, I think.
Oh, okay.
So, and even when it erupts, lame. It's like, it's not like, you can actually still go up there and watch it when it's erupting. You're like, the watch point is far enough back that, and it's high enough up that you're fine.
Okay.
It's not like Mount St. Helens when it erupts. Like, it's just like starts spewing lava, basically. So, but it was really cool. Like, yeah, if you ever go to the Big Island, Hawaii, going to the volcano, which is actually a national park, is really cool. So
awesome. Well, we're glad to have you back, man. We're glad that you are back and refreshed. And this guy is running Cubs games, man. Adam Staszynski, he's getting those games on the air. He's making it all sound good. So we're all doing our – Weeder will be at the Cubs game. I'll be out at Gallagher Way Wednesday and Thursday, if necessary, doing the Raheem Harris and Grody show. So come out and say, hey, Dan, anything else? Is that it? Are we good?
Giving you guys both a footnote, the Bears are back in Las Vegas in 2027. Take the North road trip. Start planting the seeds now with the people that matter. Take the North road trip 2027 back in Las Vegas.
It's time. It is time to take this show on the road. For Dan Wiederer of The Athletic, for the freshly returned Adam Sidzinski, executive producer of the Take the North podcast and running those Cubs playoff games, I am Mark Rohde saying thank you so much for listening to and watching the Take the North podcast.
Great talk. See you out there.
Thank you, everybody. The Bears.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.